Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Okay, hold on a second. Please excuse me if you can for my poor attendance. I'm having some problems with my lungs. I hope to have it dealt with in a few days, but for a couple of days I may be erratic. Okay, now I have to wait for this to come up again. We're halfway through, a little more than halfway through the Mangalacharana. We've offered obeisances to Lord Chaitanya, to Rupa and Sanatana Goswami, and offered respects to Gopal Bhatta Goswami. And let's see what comes up next. Do we have any questions? In the meanwhile. Okay. Now he's going to explain what he's doing. Gopal Bhatta has already written something. Why is he rewriting it, or why is he doing something new? So he's going to try to justify that in the current verse. Text number 5. Tasyadyam grantanalekam kranta vyut kranta konditam paryalochyata paryayam kritva likati jivakaha. Okay. That first rendition of this work, meaning Gopal Bhatta Goswami's version, was a rough draft. What's the word here? That word isn't there. With some parts in topical order, others not, and some in only suggestive fragments. Kanditam, broken. And so an insignificant jiva has carefully gone over the manuscript and rewritten it in a more systematic form. Is this same verse there in the Harinam or something very similar? No, there's other words, but it almost says the same thing. In the Mangalacharan to the Harinam, about the other grammars being unsystematic, or jalpitam and kanditam, and what is the words there? Drishtavyakarana stomam? Something like that? How does it go? But what are the words you use to describe the other grammars?
He said, Ahata jopita jatitam.
Ahata jopita jatitam.
Yeah.
Okay, that's not the same as what's said here about Gopal Bhatta's draft. That was not speaking very kindly about the other grammars. Okay, so what Jiva Goswami is telling us, Gopal Bhatta Goswami wrote something that's the basis of the Sandarbhas to some extent. I don't know how thorough it was, how complete. He does say here, Kranta Vikranta. It goes backwards and forwards. In other words, it doesn't follow the same very systematic, intentional development that Jiva Goswami is going to impose on his book here. It was more, let's say, disorganized. And also Kanditam, it wasn't complete. Some things were just hinted at and not described very thoroughly. Okay, that's the nature of a draft manuscript. It hasn't been pulled together yet. Let me read something of what I wrote in the commentary. Since no copies of Srila Gopal Bhatta Goswami's original notes are known to exist, we cannot say what parts of the Sandarbhas came from him. But judging from how voluminous and coherent the existing Sandarbhas are, existing Sandarbhas, that's this Jiva Goswami's version, the material and its organization must be largely the work of Sri Jiva Goswami. Anyway, that's my opinion. If someone wants to disagree with that, we can argue it. Here he, Jiva Goswami, humbly tries to credit Srila Gopal Bhatta for doing the important part of the work. Just as Srila Sanatana Goswami credited Srila Gopal Bhatta for the Sri Hari Bhakti Vilas. I don't know, someone could try to argue that Gopal Bhatta actually wrote both of these books, but he wanted to remain anonymous. Yeah. I'm sure the Goswamis at Radharaman would like to prove that. In any case, novelty was hardly considered a virtue in the Brahminical tradition of philosophy in India. Much more valued was loyalty to one's school of thought. A philosopher's task in traditional India was not to invent new schemes of ideas. Rather, each author started with what the original founder of his school taught and what generations of commentators had added in elaboration. That's how we go about studying scripture, is we go back to the root of the tradition, the original Shastra, the original Bhagavatam or other text, and we take that as our prime authority. We're not going to look at the Bhagavatam in order to submit it to critical analysis and tear it apart. We're accepting the Bhagavatam as our authority. We're not going to judge the Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam is going to judge us or guide us. And there are the Acharyas who have stood as authorities on the Bhagavatam throughout the centuries and have recorded their commentaries to preserve their teachings. They certainly taught their own students in their own times, but they also wrote their commentaries for us, for their students and for us in the future. Our way of studying according to the traditional method is to listen to what the commentators have to say. And that's where we base most of our judgments on. Our analysis is based on what's been said by authority, by the text itself, and then how the text is explained by the authorized acharyas. This is not what they're going to teach you how to do in the university. Unfortunately, we put out our advertisement a few days ago without... I had agreed to some complaints last year to take out the first few sentences that tell you why, in effect, why go to this university when you can come here. And we sent it out again in the same form and got some very angry replies. I'm sorry. There is a difference. There's a whole it's a totally different way of approaching literature. If butterflies are sacred to you, you're not going to be happy when the botanist kills the butterfly and sticks it on a piece of paper with a pin. That would be considered sacrilege. So when you do the same thing to our Bhagavatam, we don't like it. I'm sorry. Okay. Okay, let me read that sentence again. Rather, each author started with what the original founder of his school taught. That's the first thing. You belong to a certain school. You have allegiance to your school. And your first authority is the founder acharya of your school. We can say going back even before Prabhupada, our founder acharya is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. His opinion is our standard. If he chooses to disagree with his predecessors, that's his prerogative because he's Krishna. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the final authority. And those who faithfully follow Lord Chaitanya, they are our authorities. We approach Lord Chaitanya through them. Let me start this again. This is an important sentence. Rather, each author started with what the original founder of his school taught and what generations of commentators had added in elaboration. He then tried to elucidate once more the same ideas without contradicting them. As he adapted them to the language, level of culture, and special concerns of the current generation. He would also deal with controversies raised by current opponents. Faithfulness was the ideal. Although in some schools, for example, Nyaya epistemology, in other words, the Nyaya school, only token respect for the opinions of predecessors was actually maintained, especially in later centuries. Among the Vedantists, however, adherence to the opinions of previous acharyas was not merely a matter of intellectual integrity. It was an essential spiritual principle. Vaishnava Vedantists do not try to uncover reality by their own strength, individual or collective, but depend on revealed knowledge recorded in standard scriptures, shastras, and received through ancient lines of disciplic succession, guru parampara. Yasya deve para bhaktir yata deve tata gurau tasyaite katata hiarta prakashante mahatmanaha. If one has unalloyed devotion for the Supreme Lord, an equal devotion for the spiritual master, one's intelligence becomes broad and everything described in these texts reveals itself to him. That's the last verse of the Shvetashvatara Upanishad. Jiva Goswami was engaged by Srila Rupa Goswami and Srila Sanatana Goswami in editing work. He was the first editor in our line. It was a very important assignment. The books that Rupa and Sanatan wrote are perfect. Perfect revelations of the highest realizations of the Absolute Truth. But anybody who's written a book has experience that you're dealing with the material energy. It's paper on ink or, you know, blips in your hard drive. Between your thought And what actually gets in the manuscript, something can go wrong. There could be imperfections in the expression. The Paramahamsa is perfect in his consciousness and perfectly appropriate in everything he does. But only God, when he comes to the material world, comes in a spiritual body. Everyone else, the jivas, the devotees, take a material body when they're born in the material world. And material bodies make mistakes. It's not the devotee, it's the body that slips or steps in the wrong place. So even the devotee with perfect consciousness, when he expresses himself, there may be room for mechanical editing, at least mechanical editing. It's like Prabhupada. It's amazing how well he knew English. You meet many Indians who are well educated and have been speaking English all their lives, but the English they speak is sometimes quite strange. Sometimes, some cases. Especially when they try to write. It's easier to speak than to write. People who know how to speak well don't necessarily know how to write well. Writing is a skill that has to be learned. It's a special, difficult skill. Proper writing, good writing. So a good speaker is not necessarily a good writer. So unfortunately, very often, even very well-educated, very intelligent Indians, when they try to express themselves in writing, the English, in English, it comes out very hard to understand. It's amazing how clearly Prabhupada was able to express himself in English, both in speaking and in writing. Still, he wanted help in having his books edited. It's a principle. A good writer has to know this. An honest writer who's not just arrogant and not willing to let anybody help him. A good author knows that every great author has a great editor. Every great author has let his book be edited. It's always required. There's always things that have to be fixed. And it's always better to let another person look at it, especially an expert editor, and make it more presentable. It's almost impossible to just sit down and perfectly, type out or dictate a perfect manuscript. It's just too complicated. It's beyond the capacity of human mind to come out perfect the first time. Editing is required to end up with an excellent book. So therefore, Prabhupada wanted his very inexperienced disciples who had some talent but no experience in devotional service, he turned over his manuscripts to them to edit. Rupa Goswami also, Jiva Goswami, Natha Goswami also, gave their precious books to Jiva Goswami to edit. You can read the personal letters of some of the letters of Jiva Goswami to other devotees in the Bhakti Ratnakara. And he talks about how he's working on the editing of the manuscripts of his seniors. So some books he edited anonymously. He didn't put his name on it. He just edited. Other books he took a raw manuscript and turned it into something of his own creation. And that's the case here. Jiva Goswami was very much involved in that kind of collaboration, taking someone else's work and working on it and making it perfect. Any questions? Yes, sir.
We heard that Jiva Goswami, during his editing, he had kept aside some of the books of Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, and it seems he buried and saying it as Grantha Samadhi. Is it true that...
He took some books and buried them? And you mean hid them?
He called it as Grantha Samadhi, it seems, saying that...
You mean that he didn't let these books become public?
Yeah, saying
I never heard that. Is that really a story like that?
In the courtyard of Sanatana Goswami Samadhi in Vrindavan, there is a tomb which is called Grantha Samadhi, but I heard that it's controversial.
But no one really.
Well, okay, I'll tell you what I knows. what I actually heard from Gopal Ghosh, showed some stun. Many years ago, he told me there are several Granth Samadhis in Vrindavan, and where the origin of them is simply that manuscripts get too old, they become unreadable or just fall to pieces, and the proper thing to do is to bury them. So that's where the old, unusable manuscripts are put, in the Granth Samadhi. That's all. It's a burial place for old manuscripts. Then they make up some story about it, that Jiva Goswami hid away some books that we lost because he stuck them in the ground.
We hear in the Brajamandal Parikrama by devotees that certain books of Goswami's were too esoteric that Jiva Goswami found that the Kali Yuga people will not be able to understand.
Can you give us an example, name of one of those books? What books are you talking about? Ujjwala Nilamani's here. We already have some pretty intimate books that weren't buried under the ground. So I don't know what books you might be talking about. Books that are not even mentioned in Chaitanya Charitamrita and other places where the works are listed. We do have books missing on the lists that are listed, that these, the authors wrote these books and we can't find them. But you're talking about books that are not even on the lists because we don't even know what the titles might be. I don't know. Yes, the secret writings of the Goswamis. But I think this is sort of mythological. Yes.
Samadhi writes about Samadhi, Granta Samadhi a little bit. He says
yes.
There are two versions. One of them is that it does contain a box, a sealed box, or iron safe, or stone box hidden under the sacred soil near Samadhi. Anyway, it says that there are some esoteric and intimate granthis. Another version he says is, according to Nrisimha Vallabha Goswami, that when Jiva Goswami sent Srinivas Acharya Shyamananda Prabhu Narottam Thakur to preach, he gave him some copies of the original manuscripts. So fearing that the original manuscripts would be lost, he buried them to preserve them for the future. That's what he says here.
Why doesn't someone go and steal them?
Yeah.
They're just sitting there.
That's nice. Jiva Goswami thinking it impossible to properly preserve those delicate and precious handwritten manuscripts, build the Granthi Samadhi to store the valuable works of Srila Rupa and Srila Sanatana Goswamis.
Well, okay.
One of the versions.
But if they're just there, let's go there and dig them up. Go there at 2 o'clock in the morning someday. I'm sorry, one second. Vrindavan Research Institute did buy the contents of a few Granth Samadhis in Vrindavan. So you can go to the Vrindavan Research Institute and see exactly what they found in them. You know, they're being catalogued and put into collection. Yes.
Yeah, most of the temple that was at Radha Damodar, most of the library that was at Radha Damodar temple, Jiva Goswami's personal library, is there in the Vrindavan Research Institute now.
Okay.
And whatever didn't survive was put in the Yamuna, or you know, that was a big flood. I think some books
are at Ranganath Temple too.
Is it?
Uh-huh. Yeah, some things. Mm-hmm. There's also a private collection of Baladeva Vidyabhushan, which I think also was at Radha Damodar. And at least part of that is at Ranganath Temple.
I have a question about editing work. For example, like Shri Prabhupada, he gave his writing to edit to his disciples who sometimes they were not aware quite well in philosophy, so and they couldn't understand what he wanted to express. And we can see that there are many mistakes, like Nandara Maharaj, he pointed a few mistakes in Nectar of Devotion. And
yes.
In some other books, like you mentioned about Sri Chaitanya, teachings of Lord Chaitanya.
Yes.
So is there any need? Maybe we can try to or somebody else can try to re-edit all those books, Shri Prabhupada, which are supposed to be not good
edited. Well, the thing is, later editors have been working on those books. Jayadvaita Swami, Dravida Prabhu, have been working on all these books and trying to clear up those mistakes. Mm-hmm. They've been working on this for years, and they're still working on it.
Has already been doing?
Yes.
So somebody already doing it?
Someone's working on it. Mm-hmm. It's a little hard to catch everything. Some things slip through. There are still mistakes and they haven't been caught yet.
Do we have some like tape recordings of original Shri Prabhupada available?
So only Krishna book. Prabhupada had a policy of being frugal, not spending money. He had a dictaphone. He kept 4 tapes and sent them to the devotees to type and demand to give it back to me and I'll use it over again. So he used the same tapes over and over again. Therefore, we don't have recordings.
We have
some early typed manuscripts, but we don't have the original recordings. Except for Krishna book, we have tapes.
So what is the hope for us to understand what Shri Prabhupada wanted to express in some particular very complicated cases?
Well, our best hope are those senior devotees like Jayadvaita Swami, Dravida Prabhu, who have a good understanding of what Prabhupada taught and what he wanted, and have a lot of experience between the two of them, 70 years experience working on Prabhupada's books. So that's our best hope, to engage these two and a few others before they're gone, in which we'd make a final canonic version of Prabhupada's books and seal them. After that, after a certain date, no more changes. If anybody has anything to say after that, you write a commentary or a footnote, but no more changes in the books. But that BBT hasn't fixed a date for that yet. The editing is still going on. But at one point, it's going to stop. Yes.
If you remember, when you were in Moscow, and you were giving classes on the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, then in one of the Russian purpose, we found 2 sentences missing, left out in the purport, very essential sentences about how a person has to meditate not just on Krishna in the heart, but also on his devotees in the heart. And after I told about that, the BBT, local devotees taking care of the BBT in Russian language, and they told me that Dravida Prabhu had been doing a fidelity check, as they call it, Dravida Prabhu.
Dravida?
On some Prabhupada's books, and recently he was listening to, I don't know if it was preserved or not, but he was listening to a tape of Chaitanya Charitamrita, and there is a famous statement by Prabhupada in one of the purports where he says, it's best not to accept any disciples, and Ritviks are really happy to use that quote over and over again.
Yes.
When I listened to that passage again on the tapes, what Prabhupada actually said there was, some people say it's better not to accept any disciples, but... And he went on to refute the argument, so now they're going to fix it. And now they're going to go through...
That makes a big difference.
A big difference. And yeah. I think there was a statement that Jayadvaita Maharaj was accused of as inserting, but actually he just restored the original meaning of the manuscript when Prabhupada, in 4.34 and in the Bhagavad Gita, he said that it's not enough to just read books, one has to associate with the devotee, the spiritual master, almost like in person. He indicated that just books by themselves are not enough.
Yes.
But it was the original intent of Srila Prabhupada, but then it was missed out in one of his editions.
Yes.
And then Jayadvaita Maharaj restored that original phrase in the commentary.
And got a lot of complaints.
Excuse me?
Got complaints for doing it.
Oh yeah, a lot of, not just complaints, but screams and yells at him. So it looks like they're going through the books, whatever original manuscripts or tapes are available, they're going to do fidelity check, as they call
it. This process has been going on for years. Uh-huh. For at least 15 years. It's still going on.
And for now, we had already sold so many books, and some of them contain these mistakes. Do we have something like a database of all these changes which already found?
Yes. BBT 3 years ago decided to make a grand database of all changes ever made in the books. All the editing. It's an extremely complicated project, but there are several devotees working on it.
So
a database of all editing and all editions of the books ever made.
And for example, will be available on the internet, like somebody buy a book.
I think it was decided not to make it public, not to make that database public, because people with the wrong motives could misuse it. It'll be available for you know, selectively to those who want to use it for serious purposes, but it's not going to be just let out in public domain. Because those who are envious might choose to scrutinize Prabhupada's works very closely to find some fault.
So, and they may tell that it's not authentic books and so on and so on. They may tell that those books are not authentic because there are so many mistakes in them, we can't believe it in it. So therefore, it was decided to don't keep it.
Well, they're not perfect, but they're even an imperfect copy. Prabhupada's teachings are so potent, even when they're presented imperfectly, they have effect. The first books that were published in Russia, the very first books, were way off. I mean, right? There was some Isha Upanishad, there was this. But it made devotees. It made devotees. You remember the book was practically Mayavadi book, yeah. Because Prabhupada's teaching is so potent, and even covered by a haze of nonsense, it has its effect. We shouldn't do that. We shouldn't have. Prabhupada's books should be as perfect as we can make them. But it's like a superhuman effort to try to make them perfect, to try to get out all the mistakes.
So we can just have this understanding that we can keep those books which already sold and distributed, and that these books are potent and they will work, even though some apparent mistakes may be there, and we don't have to try to take it out and
change it to a new one. Go find them, hunt the books down, and burn them.
Yeah.
No, just because they have a few mistakes in them. Because there are a few mistakes, but so many right things that are in those books, even the ones that were not so well edited.
But in the case of this, like when Mahaprabhu, he mentioned about this principle contradictions, which may lead to some deviation in philosophy, we'll have this database and we can just refer to it and tell that it's a mistake and that's all.
Yes. But you know, ultimately, in our line, the authority is not a database, but a teacher. We have to have authorities, people, not just databases. People who are authorities, you know, who can interpret the database properly. So it's the personal authority that's going to be the final judge. We have to have such proper authorities. That's what we're trying to get trained up for. You have to be able to present Prabhupada's books properly. When someone says, hey, what's this? What does it say in the original Sanskrit? Why did Prabhupada say this? You can answer. From your experience and your training, you'll be able to satisfy that doubt. Was there something in the back? Dermatibu. I'm sorry, he's been waiting for his chance.
I just wanted to mention that we do have a website where Jayadvaita Maharaj, at least before, published all the major changes that that were made in second edition of Bhagavad Gita,
yeah.
Yeah, and then also, I think Chaitanya Charitamrita also was, maybe they removed, but I saw. But
yeah, that was Jayadvaita Maharaj's own initiative to make public his own changes.
And it's very obvious, actually. I went through all of them on the website, and there was a conference in Wincom also made for that.
Yeah. But he felt the need to do that because there were so many complaints. So to answer the complaints, he came out and explained everything he did.
Just a point about jivas having material bodies, like Krishna. You said that Krishna, when he comes with a spiritual body, but the jivas, they take a material body. Is that the case for acharyas who come later on after the Lord's pastimes, or is that also the case for eternal associates who
come with
the Lord also?
I have heard this, Prabhupada saying this, so I never thought it was that complicated. I just took it as a general statement that jivas come here and take material bodies. Jiva, any jiva, even eternal associates, even associates in during the Lord's avatar, that they're in material bodies. Maybe I'm wrong. That's what I thought Prabhupada was saying.
Yeah, I also don't know. I'm just asking.
Yeah. Krishna says, Sambhavami Atmamaya, that I'm born by my Atmamaya, but, just, you know, and Prabhupada says, self-same body. And maybe even in that purport, he says something about the jivas don't take the same, they don't appear in their spiritual bodies.
Did you hear it in a lecture or is it in a book?
I can't remember. We can look around for it. Yes.
We hear an explanation that Prabhupada explains after a devotee achieves the final goal of life, which is prema bhakti in this life, then he enters into a universe where Krishna is manifesting his pastime. At that time, he gets a spiritual body wherein he can advance in the higher stages of prema, as the sneha, mana, pranaya, and so on. So those things cannot be experienced in the material body, because the material body is not capable of handling such higher ecstasies. So he gets a special body in which he experiences those things.
Okay, but then you're saying you're contradicting me. It's okay. But you know, I thought that in the material world, this universe or some other universe, living entities don't take spiritual bodies with them when they come here. They leave their spiritual bodies back home and come here and get a material body. You're telling me that when you are going to the universe where Krishna is performing his pastimes, you take a spiritual body because otherwise you couldn't experience all the deep emotions.
I'm asking whether how to reconcile this.
Well, where does that statement come from?
In Krishna book, he explains that a person enters into another universe
and takes a spiritual body? Check that.
But
check and see whether it says he takes a spiritual body. Okay, you can come back to me tomorrow. You know, come back tomorrow and tell us whether you found that.
But this explanation is given by Maharadi Maharaj.
Okay, you can check him also. You can see what he says. We can bring it back tomorrow. We can further discuss it. Yes.
There's a statement in Srimad Bhagavatam, the third canto, a particular level of perfection by devotees. It says here that, 328, 37, and 38. It says that when a person attains his real identity, this perfectly realized soul has no conception of how the material body is moving or acting, just like as an intoxicated person cannot understand whether or not he has clothing on his body. And then next sentence says, next verse, the body of such a liberated yogi, along with his senses, is taken charge by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And it functions until its destined activities are finished. In other words, it says here that the Lord does take over even the material body of a person when he attains prema bhakti. It looks like it gives some little provision for being almost as perfect as Krishna for some exalted person.
Well, what I remember Prabhupada saying, it must have been a lecture, is that devotees, jivas who are devotees in this world, don't have spiritual bodies. They have spiritualized bodies. And he gives the example, I remember, of making a sword and sticking it into the fire. Blacksmith puts the steel sword in the fire to temper it. It becomes red hot like the fire, but it's still metal, it's not fire. So like that, a devotee's body in this world is spiritualized, completely under the control of the spiritual energy, but it's material energy. I remember Prabhupada saying that. It must have been in lectures more than once, but I can't remember. I can't tell you exactly where.
I mean,
so it seems like that verse you read is describing a spiritualized body. Yeah. Yeah. So what you're discussing is you can't fully experience prema bhakti in a material body. And therefore, you have to have a spiritual body in order to. Okay, well, why don't you get all the information and we'll discuss it tomorrow. Yes?
Yeah, it seems like that would definitely be the case for a sadhana bhakti, somebody's practicing Vaidhi bhakti, that he he gradually becomes more and more spiritual, becomes Jivanmukta, and his body is like taken over, the functions are taken over the Lord, it becomes like a spiritualized body. But I get the question, the doubt is in regard to the eternally liberated associates.
Eternal associates who join the Lord in his appearance.
Yeah, because they're not starting from a material level and coming up to a spiritual level.
My understanding, maybe it's wrong, well, the way I understand what I thought Prabhupada said, sorry I'm old and my memory isn't that strong, but what I think I was taught was that in general jivas take material bodies. Whether you're an eternal associate or a materialist or a sadhaka, it's just the same thing. It doesn't make a difference what level of consciousness you are on, but when you come to the material world, you get a material body. Just like you go to some other country, you want to drive around in a car, you got to go rent a car. Yeah. And just people, you know, foreign visitors in the country, if they're driving cars, they're driving rented cars. Like that, you come to the material world, whether you're actual resident of the spiritual world or whether you belong to the material world, you're going to be driving around in a material body.
That might explain, I'll give it to Srimati Maharaj. That might explain how sometimes certain devotees like Sananda Goswami, they may get a certain disease of the body or...
Well, yeah, if they have if they have the same spiritual body they have in the spiritual world, they should never get sick. And if they seem to be, they're just faking it because they have spiritual bodies. Please.
I was just thinking that what you're saying is actually supported by Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna tells Arjuna that basically I remember, you don't.
And why doesn't Arjuna remember?
Yeah, and Prabhupada explains in the purport that why Krishna remembers and Arjuna doesn't is that Krishna has a spiritualized body, has a spiritual body, but Arjuna doesn't.
Okay, so Prabhupada says that in what does 4-5? Yeah, in the Gita. Thank you. Madam Mohan?
Devotion in Bhakti Shastri 1998. So you're quoting the time that verse from Bhakti Rasamrita Sinha, Siddha Seva Sadaka Rupina, Siddha Rupina Chatrahi, Tad Bhava Lipsuna Karya, something like Raja Loka Nusarata. So you're explaining that these acharyas, they were taking up the roles of sadhakas, and that sadhaka role is performed by their material body externally, but even that is performed perfectly. In other words, it teaches how to be perfect sadhakas by their own spiritualized, albeit still material bodies, whereas their own spiritual bodies are intact and they're within their pure consciousness, and that those bodies, they render their service in their eternal positions. But looks like when we get back to the original pastimes of Lord Chaitanya in the spiritual world in Navadvipa, so those eternal associates like Sanatana Goswami, Rupa Goswami, there are, and they're seated sadhaka dehas, but they're all sadhaka dehas.
In the spiritual world.
Yeah, they're spiritual bodies, although they look like Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami. In other words, these material bodies are the exact replicas of their sadhaka dehas in the spiritual world.
They're male bodies in the Navadvipa part of Goloka. I also, there's something discussed in the Bhakti Sandarbha that the Supreme Krishna doesn't interfere with the devotees in their suffering. He doesn't interfere with their lives, that he has to deputize his devotees, because Krishna doesn't experience the pain of material existence. And in order to be able to help the conditioned souls, the devotees who come to this world on Krishna's, for Krishna, have to experience the suffering in order to feel the full compassion and, you know, sympathy for the conditioned souls. They have to experience the same suffering. So it seems that requires having a material body. If you have a material body, you won't experience suffering, and you won't really know how much the conditioned souls need your help.
I think what you've just said, I think Prabhupada writes the same thing in his comments on the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, 8th chapter, 38, 1 or 31. He says that Krishna experiences the misery of this world through his devotees who act almost like nerve endings. He doesn't use those words, but he says that the unity of the Lord with this world is done by means of his devotees.
Yes.
Just like when we paint our finger, the whole consciousness goes to that pain part, the hurt part, the same way when there's suffering in this world, consciousness of Krishna goes through devotees to that part. So their compassion is actually Krishna's compassion manifest. So it just confirms what you have said, Prabhupada
okay,
writes about
so
explicitly.
Okay, so when you're sick and suffering, you can meditate on how this is actually your responsibility to suffer for Krishna. it's late. This is one more question.
In one seminar about nectar devotion, I've heard that when devotee achieves this level of Bhava Bhakti, he starts to experience this spiritual emotion, but it's just the ray of Prema Bhakti. And when Prema Bhakti develops in full capacity, this material body cannot tolerate. It's not meant from this those emotions which one experiences. So, and at that point, one has to leave this material body and go to the spiritual world.
Well, look at the example of Rupa Goswami.
Yeah.
He kept his emotions in check until the very end. You know, he although he's expressing so much, teaching us so much about these emotions, he had to actually suppress them in himself because he wouldn't be able to stay in the material body. Only at the very end did he sort of explode. That's what I read.
Mm-hmm. And therefore,
that would mean that Rupa Goswami was in a material body. Yeah, suppressing his spiritual emotions.
And also in this connection, I've heard that therefore Krishna, especially sometimes, he withdraws these emotions to the devotee so that he could stay in this material world. He didn't give him those emotions in full capacity because he wants him to preach, for example, to fulfill
to preach
his mission.
And to do other services.
Yeah.
We forego the complete experience of that ecstasy of rasa. Because if we delved completely into it, we wouldn't be able to maintain our material existence. Mm-hmm. You have a case of someone like Raghunath Das, who was deeply delving, and he was more or less staying in a material body, but he wasn't doing very much. Jiva Goswami had to come and manage things for him at Radhakund. Yes.
Last December in Bhaktivedya Purna Maharaj was explaining in Mayapur that he quoted the similar instance of Shyamananda Prabhu going to the... So he said that when Shyamananda Prabhu was going to ecstasy, he used to go to a trance, and then from Prakata Lila he would go to Aprakata Lila in a spiritual body, then he used to experience all those things. At that time he made the same thing, that he made this point that because Shyamananda Prabhu was in a material body, he was not able to go to the higher stages, so he used to many acharyas like that, like Srinivas Acharya, and he gave several examples that they used to go to the Aprakata Lila in the same time in the trance, and then there they used to assume their original spiritual bodies and experience such things, and there he told that material body is not capable. That's why I couldn't understand this. You said this point.
Well, okay, a devotee in the material world has a material body. He can also develop, at least to some extent, his spiritual body, or occasionally, you know, enter his spiritual body. That's what you're describing. You have to have a material body, but you could also keep your spiritual body tucked away somewhere and sometimes use it. Yes, Srimati?
I don't know whether I'm correct or not, but I'm feeling with this conversation that perhaps we have a limitation in the sense we still deal with duality. Yes. We're still dealing with duality. It's very difficult for us to understand the nature of a Siddha Purush.
Yes.
But there's a very beautiful story about Prabhupada told by the devotees from Bombay who were pioneers, where they explain that one day Prabhupada was in his rooms and a reporter wanted to see him. And he was busy signing checks and talking about cement and so many things. And this reporter kept saying, but Mahatmas are supposed to always be glorifying Krishna. All I see you doing is signing checks and talking about cement. And Prabhupada tolerated it for some time and kept on signing checks and talking about cement. And then the reporter got more and more insistent that actually a Mahatma is supposed to be just talking about Krishna, but you're doing all these other things. And finally Prabhupada said, you come here. So the reporter came and went to Prabhupada's back. Prabhupada told him, you go to my back and you listen. And the reporter put his ear against Prabhupada's back. And he heard from Prabhupada's heart, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So then the reporter was completely overwhelmed and was really feeling like, you know, I've offended a great soul. He is a Mahatma, he's doing all these other things, but he's also chanting Hare Krishna, but he's chanting with his heart. So it just gives an indication that actually from our, I don't know from your, but from my minuscule vision, how can I understand the behavior and nature of a Siddha Purush who comes into this world and acts as an ordinary person?
No, if we have to know about these things, we should accept what authorities tell us beyond our ability to speculate on it. But if you have some authoritative statement, we can hear it. Okay, we got to stop now. Thank you all. Glory to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.